Hey, what's going on, everybody? And welcome to the live edition of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I didn't almost say football, but I may have because everything in my feed is football, football, football. We need to get some baseball in. And here we are heading into week 18. All-Star break is over. Jordan Walker won the home run derby. And I am joined by the arguably best fantasy player in the world, fantasy baseball and football. I could just say fantasy player, Mr. John Posma. John, how are you today?
Hey, Vlad. Thanks for having me on. I'm doing great. Thanks.
Yeah. So far we always say this around this time of year, like where has the season gone? It's flown by. We're already at that point of the year where there's 40% of the season to go. Maybe not quite stretch time, but, you know, it's just flown by. So how are you? How's the season been treated?
It's been a good season so far. I mean, every season's a good season in terms of the enjoyment of this sport, right? Or this game. It's just so fun. And whether you're doing well or not doing well, I don't know. I've had teams that are terrible and teams that are good and years that are bad and years that are good. And to me, it's just such a challenging and fun game that we play, and I would definitely miss it if we didn't have it, right? So I love it. So and yeah, this year it seems like the All-Star break is a little later. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's always at the 60% mark. I don't really remember, but it's close. But yeah, over halfway, and a lot of people dropping off pretty quick to play football maybe. So it's good. Good time of the year. I love this last part.
Yeah, it usually is around this time, usually about 44% of the season left to go at this point of the year. Everyone still calls it the second half. It doesn't matter. But
yeah,
even if you go on FanGraphs and you look up first half, second half splits for previous seasons, that second half they're showing you is after the All-Star break. Let me ask you about just kind of starting there off the top. I'm sure we're not collective bargaining agreement experts. I don't have any inside information. I don't think you do. There's obviously everything seems to be really negative with the fact that they may not be even discussing things until December. The fact that they are right. So far apart, like what percentage odds would you give it of us having a season now, just based on what you know, what you think would happen? Like, what's the positive argument?
I think there's the positive argument. There's a lot of money at stake, right? If they, I guess that goes both ways. I feel like there will be a season. I think there's going to be some delays though, right? It makes this sport harder or this game harder in terms of the game operator and what to do and drafts and live drafts and all that kind of stuff. But, the owners are really going to stay strong, I think, on this. Yeah. And they're going to fight for that cap. And I think there's trouble coming on this. What do you think?
Similarly, I'm generally an optimist. I was very much an optimist the last time we had this scare a few years ago. I do think it might impact our fantasy games and planning a little bit. I think they'll get it done beforehand, but not without stress. It's going to be tearing on us. But listen,
these things always go down to the end, right? It's a shame that it can't be worked out sooner, but it never does get worked out until there's some heartburn, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Heartburn's part of it. Heartburn, of course, we all get when we spend a lot of time on social media, a lot of crazy stuff going on here. So we'll, you might be watching this through social media or on YouTube, but FTN Fantasy baseball season keeps going. Got lots of articles every week. I have with us today, John Posma. For those that do not know him, he is an NFBC Hall of Famer, several overall titles, dozens upon dozens of league wins, lots of close ones, a lot of ones that you've come close to taking down, but overall just a very consistent player year in, year out. And it just so happens, John, that your main event heading into the All-Star break is first overall. And it's a very strong team. We like to say, has legs, has bones, whatever it is. And there are a lot of good teams around you. I'm looking at about 100 points overall or so And those things shift quickly, right? In one day, someone can still move up 150 plus points. It happens, but just kind of wanted to go over your team, what it looks like, what your plans might be for it.
Yeah, it's one of the most boring teams you'll ever see. Like, you look at this team and think, I look at this team and think, no way, is this a first place team, right? But it doesn't get much more boring than what this team is. Brian Reynolds, Michael Harris, Cronenworth, McCarthy, Buxton, Riley, Dansby, Stott, Aranda. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of good stuff there, but good enough, I guess, for right now. We'll see how it holds up. It's stronger in hitting than it is in pitching, but it's an Ohtani team, so I should have started with that, I guess, right? So I had the one pick in this draft, and I started Ohtani.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Right.
Your first overall pick. Have you used him as pitcher at all, especially if you're saying you're weak at pitching?
Yeah, so I tried to do it this past week, not on this team, but I had one other Ohtani team. And, that didn't work out so good. He didn't even pitch, right? So that was like a double whammy, really bad. But that is a point here on this team is that given where I'm a little bit short to the field, perhaps Ohtani, if he is healthy the rest of the way, I could use him as a pitcher, and I might do that.
And you've got Byron Buxton on this team. Hopefully he'll be back soon. And correct me if I'm wrong, but your style of play, you're not the massive spender. You're not chasing the prospects. And we've talked about it a lot with the main event. It's a smaller pool of teams. You've got less than 1,000 teams. Whereas the online championships, another game that you're really good at, you've got, closer to 3,000 teams. And so, the smaller pool of players, like, we don't have to go super pizzazz, and that's both with draft and in with FAB, right? A lot of it is good timing. A lot of it is, good allocation of resources, spending your money wisely. I know you picked up Sam Antonacci at a phenomenal time. He's just been good the whole season and is part of this fantastic offense there with the White Sox. And then Jake McCarthy, right place, right time. You grab McCarthy. Do you remember if this was he was starting to get more playing time, or were they at home for a week? Like, what do you remember when you picked up McCarthy?
Yeah, I'd have to go back and look at that plot. I don't remember exactly when I picked him up. Part of the problem is I'm just a McCarthy fan over the past years as well, and not always does that turn out very well. But in this case, he's turning. I think it was when Doyle was having some trouble that I picked him up. But yeah. I could look back and see, but he's been good. Yeah. So this, it's kind of a normal build for me, this team. I like to start with, from the one hole. Of course, you like to start from the one hole if you can. And I got fortunate to get the one pick. And then 2-3 turn, I was kind of dialed in that it was going to have to be yellow, either two starters or a starter reliever. I probably wasn't going to go two relievers, even though that seemed to be some of the rage this year at draft time was doing that. And then, so I took Sale and Johan Duran. So that worked out fine. 4-5, Riley, Framber, and then Buxton, Iglesias, 6-7, Harris and Sonny Gray, 8-9. And of course you got to add Dansby. I always have Dansby. So I think I've got him on 5 of my 6 main events. So, wow. I'm definitely, don't label me a Cub fan because I definitely am not, but no. I do like Dansby.
That's going to be a lot of fun, right? So I have him on like my TGFBI team, which is winning the league and everything, but you look, you're like, man, I wish I had him on some really good teams. And he kind of does fit that profile of an underrated player in fantasy because he isn't all that, exciting. He doesn't have, the high floor and everything. He is a former first overall pick, but for most of the season, he had been underperforming. He was hitting in the bottom of this lineup. But what was that feeling when he was just having those massive games? I'm guessing you were watching some of those games, just seeing him go off or, RBI records and all kinds of stuff. It must feel good.
He had a pretty good weekend there, or a week, you know, he's been hitting low in the lineup, like you said, and not been overwhelming in his production. But then at the end of the day, he always gets his numbers, it seems like. So he's hurting you a little bit in average, but he does everything else. So, yeah, he's been a good player. I like him. I've always kind of liked him. So we'll keep rolling him out there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. In that same vein, another guy who he's really fit the prototype of boring player, but then this past season, last year, Brian Reynolds of the Pittsburgh Pirates just wasn't really good at for fantasy. And so his ADP went from 80 to 100 last year to over 200 this year, and seemed like there was some good value there. But did you have any feel or idea, even with potential of Connor Griffin joining the team, did you really think this was going to be going into the All-Star or coming out of the All-Star break, the team tied for the most runs in Major League Baseball? Yeah, and I'm sure you weren't guessing that the Nationals would be the other one, but Reynolds is awesome.
Sure. Yeah, those two teams are quite a surprise on the offensive side for sure. In terms of Reynolds himself, I've always been kind of a Reynolds fan as well. And just I love those players that give you something in all the categories. You know, and he kind of fits that mold as well. And I don't remember if the 14-15 turn was where he was going. That's where I got him in this team. I've been known to take Brian Reynolds quite a bit. So it just fits that kind of. And then Aranda was earlier. That was one of my targets, I would say, Aranda. Nice. Just that high average power, right? You don't get that too often. And that's been a good pick too. So this team, ironically, the first 15, I guess, are all still on my team and have played almost all year, right? So it's been, knock on wood, fortunate on injuries, and it's been a healthy team, and that does make a difference. So.
And you have Samuel Basayo on the team as well. Where were you in draft season with the whole, him and Rutschman are going around the same place? And a lot of people were like, just skipping on him entirely, or some had two catchers at that point. Was he a full-on target for you, or he just fell in your lap somehow?
Yeah, it ended up being on this team, I felt like I needed a little bit more power. I don't remember if I had Basayo ahead of Rutschman, but so much is team dependent as you're drafting, right? Like, so I rostered Michael Harris, and not necessarily a lot of power there. And I don't know, I just felt like I needed a little bit more power there. So I took Basayo, but those two kind of, they did go right next to each other, 11-1 and 11-3 in this draft. So, I think Warner took him at 11-3. So either one would have been good. And they've been great. So I can't say, I'd like to say I target them, because if I did, I'd have them a lot more drafts. It's my only one. So got to have one of everyone, right?
Brandon Marsh, that was a good one. I don't know if that was a fab pickup for you, if you picked him up towards the end of the year. So he was actually someone I highlighted in my outfielder article in the preseason, just believing that it kind of fit that mold of a guy that could produce across the board. We've seen him hit for average before. We've seen him steal bases, hit home runs, and the possibility that maybe he would get the opportunity to hit against lefties. And he's been in that lineup every day. Philly's outfield is really kind of, meager. If you just think about the fact that they are having to play a guy like, Derek Hill, they're playing Gabriel Rincones Jr., who is just out of the minors and just a guy essentially. And Carl's son, Justin Crawford, for fantasy purposes, he hasn't been all that solid. But yeah. Brandon Marsh, is he a target for you in the preseason?
Marsh was. Yeah, he nice. Kind of bubbled up on Babs definitely was a target. You mentioned Justin Crawford. I did draft him too. And 16th, and I dropped him, so I don't have him anymore. But Marsh was a 22nd round pick, so 22, 23 turns. So that if you get a couple of those, that's great if you can get something in that area of the draft. And I was fortunate to get Brandon Marsh there, and yeah, he's been great. I've got a few of him, and it's been a pleasant surprise.
With you Austin,
know, the reason I have him blot is because you wrote about him. And
Sure.
No, I appreciate your writing and your insights. It's great.
Well, hopefully you ignore the third base section where I spread much love to Mr. Austin Riley, because no way in a million years would I think that Austin Riley would be this bad, striking out at a clip over 30%.
He was my next hitter after Ohtani. I took him at the 4-5 turn in this one, and he's not been good, right? And in fact, I dropped him in a 12-teamer. I'm not going to drop him probably on the 15, but he has just not been good. And he was the guy getting a lot of hype as the end of the draft season, right? He was moving up. There was the report about him running and how many bases he was going to steal. He's been a dog.
He's been really, really bad. I've been paying attention to some quotes from him, and it just seems as the season goes, the confidence is dropping a little bit, to the point where the last comment a couple weeks ago was like, I just don't know what's wrong. It's got to be better eventually,
it's what he like said. A little bit mental, right? For sure. Mm-hmm. Something with his hitting coach. He doesn't have the same hitting coach.
Yeah.
He's having a hard time with this game right now.
Having Austin Riley just start to get going, I think obviously would do really well for this team that for the most part seems to me like it's avoided a lot of big injuries. On the pitching front, you got Chris Sale there as your ace. You take Framber, he's had his ups and downs. And Sonny Gray has been a phenomenal pick. ERA under 3 and just one of the aces there. Lots of good pitching there on the Boston Red Sox. And then you grab Braxton Ashcraft. He's been solid as well. He's probably has a little bit of a innings limit, right? A little bit. How do you think they might treat him down the stretch, especially if they want him for the playoffs?
Yeah, I think it's going to come into play with several players, Ashcraft being one of them. I think there was a great article in HQ. Bloomfield highlighted Ashcraft as a guy that was probably going to get limited. He did a nice chart or whatever he calls those things, Bloom boards or whatever. And it was a comparison of innings pitched to career high innings pitched. And Ashcraft didn't, he's going to get limited at some point here, but he's been good so far. And I just need to know that it's not going to last and have some plans on that part, right?
Hopefully there are a couple of guys that you added for the second half that will treat you well. These are three guys that I've actually been kind of continuing to highlight in my articles, and they haven't been the best, but they're three guys that I really do like. We're going to pick our spots for them, for some of them, of course, but Shane Bieber, for example, I think is going to get going here at some point. Sean Manaea, we'll see, right? I think he gets with Seattle this week. I think we're gonna be starting him or next week. I'm sorry, he's gonna get he's home at Tampa.
Which one? Who is?
Shane Bieber.
Yeah, next week. He's home against the White Sox tomorrow. So we need that to be good, and then hopefully we can keep rolling him. But I've got a couple Biebers, and that's just one of those guys that you hope can carry you the second half.
Yeah. Sean Manaea is another one. I think, we pick our spots for him next week. He's at home against the Dodgers. And I think if people have alternatives, they might choose to go that path. And then the third guy I like a lot. He was a closer for the A's for just a little bit of time, but he's a big strikeouts guy. His velocity, even his strikeout rate, hasn't dipped all that much since he's jumped in the rotation. So he's good for strikeout leagues, leagues that count strikeouts and earn runs, because he's definitely been giving up a lot of those. But again, as a guy, maybe we don't start in the heat at home in Sacramento, but for road starts like next week at the Diamondbacks, that's something I'm going to probably want to start.
Which guy are you talking about?
Perkins, Jack Perkins.
Yeah, I've had my Perkins run. I'm done with Perkins. You can go Perkins, but I can't do it anymore.
it's difficult for those guys because it's similar to the Rockies, right? I mean, obviously you have some stronger arms there with the A's, but with Rockies pitchers, I remember in the days we were drafting Herman Marquez early. He was going top 200, but a guy like that, when You just know first week of the season, he's at Dodgers. Like, you can't start that. How do you draft guys like that? So, yeah, I definitely.
The short week gets a little tricky too, right? Because you're wanting to get as many pitchers to pitch, but some of the matchups are so bad and the alternative is a zero just because there's a short week. Those are hard calls. I often regret starting a couple guys. And like this week, I'm starting Manea at Philly, right? So that I could regret that tomorrow, and I can't change it at this point because that one's locked, right? So we'll see what happens.
I don't hate it.
You like it
below,
right?
Below average WRC plus in most many categories, yeah, against lefties. So Manea could maybe get away with it.
I thought Jax was going to be okay too, but I guess not.
Not today. two other pitchers I wanted to mention, two other starters that you have. This is impressive, and this is a very big part of fantasy success. It's the difference between, honestly, in these competitive main events, winning your league or not. It's knowing when to sort of back off. That's exactly what you did with Bryce Elder and Walker Buehler. You got a lot of their good starts, and you avoided the disasters. Like, I'm looking at your team of, anyone can do it. You can go to the overall main event. You can click on John's team, and you can click on to see his fantasy stats. And if you notice, Elder and Buehler have very low ERAs and WHIPs for his team. And so that, to me means that you avoided those disasters. So that's impressive. Anything you saw coming there, or just good luck, good timing?
Yeah, Elder was just really he was really struggling two or three starts in a row. And you just see that something wasn't right with him. And I jumped off him pretty quick. Buehler, I don't know. He's terrible, right?
Not the same.
I mean, you only need to take a couple of those big hits from these pitchers, and Dustin May, same thing. And you just, it hurts you. And you just, sometimes I just, out of spite, cut a guy, right? Because it's been crap on your team, and you've had enough of it. You can't deal with it anymore, and you're going to go to somebody more reliable, or even some of these middle relievers are going to be better. I got a couple guys in the wings. I got Tyon, hopefully back soon. Molly, I'm not sure what to do with him. He's kind of on the bubble for me. Framber, we had good Framber last week. So if we get good Framber the rest of the way, that'd be great. Bailey Ober was a big pickup of mine this week. We'll see if that's going to be good, bad, or otherwise. Probably bad, but we got him. We'll see. So there's some risk, obviously, with some of those names I just said on this team. So it's for sure not a slam dunk. I would definitely take the field over this team, but it's fun to be in a good spot right now. And I got a couple $100 of fab left. So in the middle of the pack there, Lowy is right behind me, and what a year he's had across the board. It looks like time for him to get back to football for sure.
Yeah.
He's got a bunch of teams up there. So it's going to be a good battle on this, even just for the league, is going to be a good battle. So
now is the team. So Glenn Lowy is his Hall of NFFC Hall of Famer. Does Glenn, he's fourth overall. Is his team in the same league as yours, where that's first, or is that a different?
No, a different one. He's got one that's 15th as well. So, So the 15th team is in my league. And then Todd Whitestone is in third. He's back a little further on the overall, but I think that might be Todd and James together, maybe, or maybe just Todd. I'm not sure. Sometimes they do it together. It'd be a good battle. Lowy's at 125.5 points. I'm at 131.5. So it's tight, and he's right there. So a couple blow ups on those pitchers I mentioned could even us out pretty quick.
Happens quickly. Another thing to point out about your team is that you have all of your saves from essentially two players. And, you got a couple from Brad Keller there. There was a little stretch where you rostered
$189 Brad Keller, let me tell you.
You got to use it for something. So, hey, listen, that could be worth it, right? Those three saves could be worth $100.
That was so dumb. Anyway,
but you kind of proved the theory that if you can just get two strong closers, you paid up for two guys, and in Duran with your third pick on the turn, and then Raisel Iglesias, who was, there was a little fear of, you know, Robert Suarez signing a year longer deal, and for just a million less than him, that he could take the job. And so there were people taking Robert Suarez around 150, but yeah, you, I think you took Iglesias probably somewhere between 80 and probably the 90, 91.
Six, seven turn. Yep. I guess I must have missed Gecko's podcast, so otherwise I wouldn't have taken him. But yeah, I'm glad I missed it.
Yeah. I mean, no, it's been great. I remember that. You never know what I never know what's true or not with with that. good man though. Iglesias, he is not. Oh, he finally gave up a couple home runs. So he had a long stretch, probably 3 months without giving up a home run. So, it's a great thing to not have to chase and spend money, spend fab on closers. I mean, you did anyways. It would have been nice to just have a third.
Right. Yeah. Thought I was going to be really smart and get that third one, Brad Keller. He's going to be great.
He's done for the year, by the way.
I know.
Torn arm. So,
yeah, not good.
So at this point, we kind of laid the foundation for the squad. You said you have a couple $100 left in fab. At what point do you start looking more at overall standings versus league? How often are you clicking in on the overall standings, and how are you looking at attacking categories? And part of that question is also, does it have a lot to do with who's chasing you in the league, how close they are?
Yeah, so I think it's important to look at categories all the time. It's just logical that you would in terms of the league. And then in terms of the overall, I think you get an idea about halfway through if a team – sometimes you kind of know right after the draft that you got a good team, right? And sometimes it's this team I felt was a good team pretty quick. And it's been up there for quite a bit of the year. And I'll be honest, I look at the overall quite often in terms of the categories. So, and that's just a function of identifying the areas where I like to use the 80%. I'm sure people have heard me talk about that before, and you can pick whatever number you want. You can make it 85, you can make it 90. I don't think it really matters which one you pick. I feel like it's just intuitive that you can gain the most points by having each of those categories equal up to around that 80%. So if you got one that's lagging in the 50 range, getting that one from 50 to 80 is going to result in a lot of overall points. And that's the area of the chart, you might say, that you could pick up a lot of points. If you got one really lagging in the 20 or 30, getting that 30 to 50 is not going to result the same amount of points. So it's important. I like balance. I'm a big believer in balance in the draft. And you kind of know which way after the draft, everything didn't go the right way, right? You missed out on your speed guys, or you missed out on the power guys. And so then you lean that way a little bit more in fab, right? And then you keep looking at it, and at the quarter pull, at the half pull. Now we're at the 60% mark, right? Where are you at? And for me on this team, homers, RBIs, average, and stolen base runs, homers, RBIs, average, all over 95%. So there's not much to gain there. I just got to keep them near that area. But stolen base is at 69%, for example, on this team. So that's the perfect one to be low on, right? So yeah. I feel great about that. But the pitching's not as rosy, right? So as you might have projected or might have picked up when I was talking about some of those players and who they're pitching against and et cetera, I'm 63% on Ks and 69 on WHIP. The rest are good. So maybe Ohtani comes into play there, right, with K and WHIP. So I feel good about that, other than that he's hurt, right, or somewhat hurt. So we'll see. I do like the flexibility of having Ohtani to move into that, especially if you're 95 plus on the power categories. So maybe there's some room there. So I feel fairly good about this team.
Yeah, I'm looking at the category standings now in the overall, and I feel like your team is exactly where I would want a leading overall team because of the categories that you're short. And you mentioned stolen bases as one of them, right? Like that is one of the categories that you can find in stream, like as opposed to batting average, where it looks like you're 98th percentile, 99th. Batting average is, you know, I don't think it doesn't matter who you are, what your model says. Like I mean, there are outliers sometimes. Like there's, you know, somebody they're going to face, they're going to Colorado, and or like your Brewers, right? A few weeks ago, they went off. They went to like, you know, Colorado or Sacramento, whatever. Yeah. You can kind of smell those things coming. But if it's just like mediocre matchups, they're facing some good pitchers, some lefties, some righties. And considering the pool of players available in 15 is so, you know, it's light. It's really hard to stream the batting average. But the strikeouts, I'm sorry, the stolen bases is one thing. Yeah. Strikeouts is another one of your weak categories, which I think is another thing that you can strategically attack.
It's a little surprising that that's a weak one, given that I've been rolling two closers most of the time. So, yeah, but you're right. We can gain on Ks and maybe lose a little bit of ratios, right? So that's always the trade-off, it seems like. So, I mean, if Bailey Ober's good and back, that'll be helpful. He's probably not, but a good start against the Cubs would be great. And then Bieber back, he's a good, theoretically a good ratio guy and a help. Maybe a couple two starts along the way, the rest of the way, maybe. Maybe there's a shot in his team, we'll see.
Yeah, no, I think it definitely is a, you know, it's a nice mix. It's a good team. And then again, like you are 90th percentile in saves with essentially two guys, which I think is just really huge. I also noticed that you are human a little bit because you also did some catcher streaming. So you did get your Basayo, but you did kind of go through it there with, you know, going with the Freddie Fermin, Amaya, Henry Davis, Pedro Páez. You did actually get some really good stats. You caught Caratini at his height, so that's good. Hopefully there's a catcher there for you.
I just dropped Caratini. He's been great, but Jeffers back. I just felt like he wasn't going to get enough at bats. I debated keeping him. They don't mind playing him a little bit at DH, I don't know. So I dropped him for Wells, which is a little bit of a risk in terms of average. But Wells, I feel like, is about to go on a little bit of a heater here. We'll see. I'm on the lookout for maybe next week I'll pick up Caratini again. I don't know. I'm quite famous for it's not unusual for me to drop a guy and pick the same guy back up the following week, but not the smartest at that.
And the Twins, actually, the way it lines up, of course, this is the one week where we're looking at pitching matchups for the upcoming week, and there's nothing set in stone other than a couple of guys, and things can change. I think a couple of guys are coming back from the IL, and things will shift. But as of now, the Twins are probably going to face four lefties next week, and they get seven games. So it is kind of a good week for Caratini. You'll see it in the Fab article. I do like Luis Camposano. I think he missed the game before the break. Hopefully he's back. He's somebody that I like. Andy Rodriguez might come off the aisle as well. Somebody that's been, you know, those are two guys I've been chasing for years. It's like, just, come on, guys, just stay healthy. Just stay healthy. Have.
So the prep work you do on your weekly article, does that when you get to Fab, putting your Fab bids in, you're just more well-prepared than everybody else in terms of understanding the matchups, and it gives you an advantage, you feel like, or what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I feel like it gets better for me every single year. The one thing that I've done consistently since last year is I start the work Friday morning. So most of the time, Friday, there's, you know, even in the summer, I usually have like grandparents helping out, whatever, like, or kids are in camp, so wife's work. I have the time to put in, so I spend most of the day Friday because you know my data tables that I do for these. I'm basically, you know, it's a list of 100 plus players on each, and I'm putting notes in, so I'm feeling very comfortable with the player pool. Release those data tables with projected bid ranges on Friday afternoon, Friday evening. And then, okay. You know, the games happen. And then, of course, there are a million changes. Yeah. Usually publish the article Saturday morning, another, you know, million more changes. And inevitably, you kind of miss something here, here and there. But I'm always rushing my bids. It's one of the reasons why I played less teams this year. So I just have two main events, four OCs, and then a couple industry leagues. And for those fab leagues, I don't feel like I'm scrambling as much as I used to when I'd have like 12, 15 fab. They're, you know, you make mistakes or you have things that I don't like to do, like having the same player on your second bid because you're rushing and you don't get it, you know, things like that. So
yeah, we were in that Las Vegas Saturday main together. I think you were across the way towards the end, and that was a fun draft. Yeah, you're right behind me in that league, so that's a good race.
That was the one team. It's funny, I have one good main event, one not so good, and that's exactly how I felt about them going into the draft. Like, forgot it was like a Gunner Pete Alonso combo. I mean, of course, Baltimore hasn't played to those expectations, especially those two guys. But the team overall has been pretty solid, and just bad breaks along the way. You know, you finally get the good Spencer Strider, and then he gets hurt and other pitcher injuries. So, yeah, hopefully I'll make it fun for you.
If I remember right, you were kind of sitting next to a rogue drafter a little bit too on the end on that draft.
It's always nice where, you know, like, wait, I want to get one of these two guys, but they're two picks in front of me. Oh, wait, he just took so-and-so. All right, let's go. Yeah. Those are always nice.
Yeah, no, that was good. Sometimes that happens, though, and you just – a draft goes haywire, and sometimes it's hard to take advantage of it, though. You end up with a team that you feel like you should have taken advantage of a situation better, and then then you get in a real tough room and you end up with a better team sometimes. It's hard to figure out. This is a crazy game.
It really is. So ask you some random questions here. Not random because they're all related to fantasy baseball and fab. But, you know, if like all roto categories are being equal, like what have you historically spent more when you do go for the 150 plus player? Is that usually more a hitter or a pitcher? Is that something you've looked into?
Yeah, no. A little bit more. I probably take a chance on a pitcher in terms of fab bids. This year, Noah Schultz, I bought quite a bit. The Arizona outfielder, Waldschmidt. I did spend up on him as well on the hitter side. Neither of those have worked out. Maybe I should have held Schultz. He's back to pitching well. And I don't know. I take a lot of chances on some guys, and that triple digits on both of those guys, and that didn't turn out. I had one, I think it was in April. I bought Waldschmidt, Schultz, and Brad Keller. Schultz, Brad Keller, and Antonacci on the same week, and it was like a total of 409. So. Two of the three are gone. I still have Antonacci, of course, but I think he was 52-51, so that was a nice win. But the other ones were 189 and 159 or something like that. And not good. So there's a lot of wasted fab that goes into this game for sure.
Yeah, and it's rare when one of those big spends truly pays off. I mean, I would say for the most part, people that spent up on AJ Ewing, he's been paying off. He's been good. He's been part of that lineup. And now that the Mets are going to become sellers, he's not going anywhere. He's going to be a part of that team. So
yeah, for sure. Yeah.
He's been really strong. If you could name a couple of players or even one, like somebody that you really had to have this year, you got them and they've just been great. Like players that you've had across a lot of your teams.
I mentioned one already is Dansby, right? Dansby Swanson. I've got a lot of him. Sonny Gray was a big target of mine as well. He was just undervalued, I felt like, this draft season. He's just a good player. And then I was definitely shooting for Aranda as well, just that average power that I mentioned earlier. Other than that, I'm just trying to add boring vets that do a little bit of everything. And, I think. Hopefully was successful at some of that. How about you? Who were your targets this year?
Well, we could talk about one of them here. Randy Leeson, big second half coming for Luis Robert Jr. Have to imagine the Mets will trade him. So we all know
how, he was your Yelich, right?
He was my this year's Yelich, and it's gonna going down. And unless he just has a stellar 40% of the remainder of the season, this is going to go down as my biggest my biggest Yelich.
Could
bust
be as good as the real Yelich the rest of the way, maybe. But he hasn't. Man, he's not been that great either.
Yeah, he was kind of one guy for me. I mean, you know, there's one thing, and I'll ask you this too. As far as FOMO, the big thing for me, missing out or not being heavy on Mizorowski
or Schlettler. I got one. Yeah, I have one Miz. I had him in an auction. Like, I was leading the bid in an auction. Somebody went, I don't remember what the number was, 15, 16. I remember Brady looking at me. You know, he was the auctioneer, and I've got my Miz shirt on, and I still didn't go the extra dollar.
You didn't go with the shirt, so you were in the shirt.
I definitely should have. Another guy, Yordan, I probably is one of my biggest regrets. Just not been healthy previously, and this year he is, right? And that power average guy, that's just, he looks so good. Like, no, I don't think I have any, so. Some regrets, but hey, there's next year.
Funny enough, I kind of set my KDS for both leagues, had a little bit of where can I get Yordan to fall for me, and it didn't work out. There was always somebody drafting him before I could. So
that's, but you had the right idea. You just needed to execute. You need to jump in a little more.
Got it. Yeah, got to jump in. There's always something good.
At least you were on him. I wasn't on him, but yeah.
A couple other guys. So these are, I mean, these two guys were in a lot of sort of bust projection articles because they had just one big season each and people thought they were mispriced. I was one of those people, James Wood and Pete Crow Armstrong. Oh, it just so happens James Wood is the number one player on any fantasy rater you look at. And PCA is right there, top three. So
yeah,
where were you on them preseason?
Yeah, where was I? I was off of them. Yeah, man, really bad.
What's the lesson there for ourselves?
Right.
Is there one?
Yeah. PCA, I just felt like he didn't have enough contact, right? Man, I hear about it every single day. I'm on a chat group with a bunch of Cub fans. The PCA chatter is unbearable.
Like, you can drop out of that anytime you want. Brewer fan.
I give it back to him, so it's good. But yeah. Lots of PCA. Terang was a guy I was on, back to the guys that I was on. Thinking about the Brewers and Cubs. Terang has been great. So that guy. Well, and he should have been an all-star. I don't know. That's crap that he wasn't, but whatever.
One good thing I just thought of this. Remember the one good thing, both my main events have Jordan Walker. So that was somebody
nice.
I really did buy into the mechanical changes and you know, approach. Just such a big guy. I remember him in the preseason a few years ago in spring. He was just tearing it up. Then he had a pretty nice rookie year. Like, it was decent. And then it just seemed to me a lot of it was just, you know, mental, some mechanics. So it's really nice to see him fix it. And so,
I think the moral of the story here probably is those guys that were highly rated prospects or were, you know, on these lists, James Anderson and such, who's ever list. I think he's probably the best one to get a list from for prospects. But the guys that were up there at one point, sometimes it just takes a little longer, right? And all of a sudden it clicks like it did for this year for Walker. I'm more likely to probably lean into that a little bit more going forward. It's just, some of those guys just take a little bit longer. Something clicks, whether it's a coach along the way or a new organization or whatever, or a new coach. And boom, it all hits, and you got a stud that you didn't have to pay a lot for.
We're going to kind of wrap things up with a little bit of a fab preview. Sure. But before you do that, I want to, how can I pass an opportunity to talk to a lifelong Brewers fan about some potential Brewers fantasy value? But before I even do that, I want to ask you, even though you guys haven't won one lately, do you still consider yourself kind of like spoiled in the fact that your teams are just always good and fantasy rich? Or are you just like, but we never get there, so it doesn't matter?
Oh, the Brewers, you know, they can be fun. They're fun to follow. They're just, I mean, I just embrace the hard work ethic that they characterize. And it feels like they got something special on the pitching side with their pitching lab and Chris Hook and whoever the other guys are behind the scenes. It's not really a surprise anymore when somebody gets traded to them and they turn out great, like Harrison and so many others. I think what they did with Miz isn't hurt, I don't think, at all. They're just managing his innings. They
doing the right thing.
Purposely had him pitch lined up for the Sunday, and then they pulled it. They never intended to pitch him that Sunday. They just didn't like to pitch in the All-Star game, and smart. They're going to let him sit this week, and he'll pitch against the Mets next week, I'm sure. It's a great team. I can relate to them just in the sense of, that it's usually a bunch of underachievers, and they work hard and they get good results. And I appreciate that kind of mentality. And I aim to do that in the fantasy game, right? So, like Sal Frelick, I mean, how can you not like that guy? He dives at everything. He's always got his jersey dirty. They can beat the big market teams year after year in terms of a regular season. Yeah, but it would be nice to beat the Dodgers one of these times.
Yeah. Could happen in a year. Baseball, get hot, and yeah, it can happen. And then,
I remember as a kid when they grabbed CC Sabathia, and then they pitched him like every 3 days for 3 weeks in a row and made a run. That was so great that they finally bought somebody at the end to go for it. I'd like to see him do that again. Right. So, but it's hard to argue with their approach, right? They've got the best farm, almost every measure. They've got the best farm system and a lot of great players coming. We'll see how this kid they just called up is. I think that's trouble for free. Like actually Lara. He looks really patient and at home at the plate. And I think he's going to be a good player. We'll see.
Well, that's one of my questions. Do you see him sticking with the team for the rest of the year? As you go to roster resource, you see him as a short side platoon guy in the outfield, kind of the fourth outfielder there. And then obviously, maybe if something's been off with Jackson Churio, but he had a couple of days of rest last week. And
There's something there, right? Like that was unusual that he sat that. He's got a little bit of leg or something going on, I think. But I think Lara sticks, to answer your question. I think so. Okay. I mean, he's a better option than Blake Perkins, I think, and at least for the bat.
And he's maybe, would you say, probably not a 12-team target, but him being 20%?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's right. Yeah. I agree with that.
20% is available in main events. So
that's where he's at. Okay.
Yeah. Yep. So make sure to target him unless you're in John's league.
Who knows? Brewers never know what they're going to do. They could cut him they could send him back down by Sunday. Who knows? Yeah.
And then another hitter I want to ask you about, Andrew Vaughn. The numbers are up as far as like the rate stats, underlying metrics are okay, but he's just not playing much. Like I don't watch a lot of him. Why isn't he playing?
Yeah. He's hitting lefties well, but they're infatuated with giving Gary Sanchez DH at bats, it seems like, and he's got a little pop, and they're so short of pop. They're among the league leaders in runs, but they're at the bottom in home runs, right? It's just the way they play. So you would think Vaughn would get more run at bats, but you're right. I mean, you look at his average and you think, he's having a great year. He's still hitting around 300, but so he doesn't hurt you terribly, but he just doesn't get enough at bats. So he's been frustrating for sure.
And Jake Bowers, he's been phenomenal. Ooh. So that's one I have in our league together. So I got
Bowers.
He's just there's always facing righties. He's always doing something, stolen base here.
He's not afraid to run. Yeah, he's been great. So sneaky.
Last one here for you on the Brewers. Who do you think among these four is going to have the best career? When it's all said and done, we're looking at 15 years between Logan Henderson, Shane Drohan, Robert Gasser, and Brandon Sproat. Who's the stud and who's the dud?
You know, that's a good question. I really like Drohan. I like him, but I don't know which one has the bigger pedigree and all that. I'm just thinking about from what I've seen and watched. I like Drohan. I don't know which one will have the better career, to be honest. I was hoping you were going to ask me about like Terang or something like that. He's the guy.
He's legit. He's amazing.
Yeah, he is.
All right. Some fab little look ahead for next week. And for the most part, it's dry. It's going to force people to maybe spend up on something for a streamer. Like, for example, Tyler Locklear, he's back up with the Diamondbacks. You know, Hart for a big part of the season. Remember him for Seattle not long ago. Probably going to steal a little bit of playing time from Eldemaro Vargas. Tim Tawa might move off first base, but they got a bunch of righties, a bunch of lefties coming up next week. So he's somebody that's interesting. And then, you know much about this kid, Tommy White. So not to be confused with Thomas White, the pitcher for the Marlins. Tommy White's got like he apparently had like some deal with Barstool when he was in college, because he's just this like big swagger guy. He wears a bunch of chains like Max Clark, and he's got had long hair. And now he kind of looks more clean cut, and he's a personality. He's coming to the A's, and I really don't know what to expect from him.
Yeah, I don't know either. That's one of the guys I need to look up a little bit more between now and Sunday. But I'll probably just go for more of the boring guys, Gleyber Torres or Semien or some of those guys maybe. But Tyler O'Neill's available a little bit. I like him. I picked him up a little bit already. Trevor Story, if he's there, right? He should be back this week or next for sure. I think that would be a good pickup. Those are probably what the guys I'm looking at. But to be honest, I haven't looked too close at next week's pickups yet.
So the O'Neill one is interesting, right? Because he's somebody that you just kind of know. You've been playing fantasy for a while. You're just like, oh, home run in consecutive days? Streakiest guy we know. Just ride him until he breaks. It just so happens the Orioles will face three lefties, the way it's projected now, for the beginning of next week. The tough part is they're good lefties, right? So they're actually some good left. Doesn't mean that he can't go to his old stomping grounds in Boston and do some damage there. But guys like him, Kobe Mayo in deep leagues, maybe Leody Taveras. I think that's a Phil special usually. But those guys are going to play against the lefties. Yeah. Whether it works out, they shut them down. That's a whole other story. So that's interesting. Gleyber Torres, you mentioned, he's probably going to be back next week. I think he's available in about 40% of mains. Marcus Semien, I don't know if he's got anything left in the tank. I had him in the main that we're in together. I dropped him when he went on the IL.
I had him and dropped him as well.
This Anthony Siegler guy on Boston, he's been leading off, and we know that Boston they've gone through it, right? Like they just cannot find their leadoff man. You had somebody like Rafaela, who's actually having a good season. He's been hitting second a lot, and he's not a big on base guy. But I mean, Mickey Gasper was the leadoff man for goodness sakes. But now you notice this hot streak they've been on since Siegler has been leading off, and it's against lefties and righties. He's still available, I think, in 30%.
Yeah, he's pretty widely available. I haven't paid too much attention to him, but we'll see what changes when Story's back. But possible.
In a 12 teamer, who would you rather stash? Somebody that might be back in 2 to 3 weeks, and that's between Jordan Lawler, Trevor Story, and Matt Chapman. How would you order those three?
I'd probably put Story first. Close on the other two. Probably Story, Chapman, Lawler, but I could be wrong for sure.
And then on the pitching side, Zach Thornton was the one. He had that big start. I believe it was last Sunday before the break. Yeah. He kind of snuck through there. Good chance he might stick in that Mets rotation. I think he's a little overhyped. I don't know if he's going to be as good as people expect. I could be wrong. I've been wrong before.
Yeah. I don't know too much about Zach Thornton. I know he had a good run there for, you know, he should be on the list, I think, for next week for sure. He's going to get some time. He's going to get a chance to play, right? So to start.
As far as two star pitchers go, two steps, we call them. You mentioned Tyler Molle. There's a time and place for him, but you never know if that time and place actually works out for your ratios, because if you look at his numbers, they've been horrific. He's also, you know, he's had some really good starts, but he's also missed a chunk of the season. He's been hurt. If you're going to go for Tyler Molle, this would make you feel like this might be the week. He's at Kansas City on Monday, if it works out that way. At Kansas City, and then home against the Angels next week. It's about as good as you can get for a two-star.
Yeah, you like the second one for sure. Casey's not a pushover on that, but I think I'd probably play him for that. Hope you do okay on the KC game and count on a really good performance on the second one. But just when you think that and you do that, then there's a rain out or something like that. It's just this game could be frustrating. And then the next week, he's a two-star again, but now they're not nearly as good matchups, right? It seems like that's what happens sometimes, but.
Mm-hmm. And it's tough, and especially in your spot, having to make that decision. That's a decision that can be really grueling sometimes, because you're looking at gaining in the strikeouts category, and if that changes, it's him versus a mediocre one start. Those are hard decisions.
Or maybe the Canadians start some more forest fires, and we can't see anything, and we got games postponed. Right?
Didn't think about that. That's a very good point. Very possible. Jansen Junk for Miami. I don't know if he's your kind of guy. I kind of like him because of his control.
My kind of guy?
No, I said I don't know if he is your kind of. He does seem like he would be. I like Jansen Junk.
So yeah, no.
I don't want to make assumptions.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I think he's a good one for next week at Houston and San Diego, right? So
yeah, home San Diego for the second one. I like that.
Yeah.
I like Jansen.
Yeah, I think he could be okay for next week. Yep.
A couple more here.
Would you have him over Molle in your queue, or which order would you do it?
I would, because I feel like I'm kind of a never Molle guy. I don't know, for some reason. I feel if I really was fighting for something, I would probably bid on him on Molle, but I don't know, just something. I just haven't been a fan. And then, you know, there's also, I don't know. I don't know if this is worth it here, but Jeffrey Springs has a road to start. It's at Arizona, at Minnesota. If I'm not mistaken, he's allowed more home runs than anyone in baseball. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I think
he's
up there. Leads the league in home runs, given up. Yep, I think so. Yeah, he should be better than he is, right? Like, what's wrong with it? Like, is it just the park? Is it mental? Is it what's with him? I guess we'll see how he does today, right? So he's not a two-star next week then, right? I think isn't he
starting today?
I thought he was starting today. But maybe.
No, if so, then hey.
They're starting jump today. Never mind. Okay. You're right. He's confirmed for Monday. Yeah, so at Arizona and Minnesota. Yeah, I think that's a good.
That could work out. Yeah, he does lead. Let me see. He has allowed the most home runs in baseball. He's allowed 26. Right behind him is Zach Littell and Aaron Nola with 23, and Minoga at 22. So, by the way, Jameson Taillon, in 30 less innings, he's got the highest home run per nine. He's allowed 20 in just 67 innings, like five less starts. So just FYI for people.
He could be a two-star next week too, Detroit and at Pittsburgh.
And then finally, Mitch Bratt, if he lines up for the Monday start. John and I talked about him beforehand. We're not going to pretend to know too much about him. Ask James Anderson, ask Lucas Beery, ask somebody else.
Yeah, I think his calling card is he's got super good control, right? So those kind of guys, a little bit easier to take a chance on, I feel like, right? So many of these guys are fantastic arms, but no control, and then they just blow up. Whereas feels like Brad would give you a good opportunity stay in the game.
Last question.
McGreevy, maybe.
Like who?
McGreevy.
Yep.
Yeah.
McGreevy. That's right. So instead of asking you about Jordan Romano, because what kind of really good answer can you get? Let's get a viewer question on the Brewers. John, are the Brewers going to make a splash at the trade deadline? They have a black hole at third base and shortstop. And do you think they go after Skubal?
Yeah, I think they're not going to go after Skubal. No way. I don't think so. That'd be great, but that would be so out of character, right? You know, Pratt's done decent. I don't think I'd consider Pratt a black hole. Joey Ortiz, I would consider a black hole, though even he's hit a little bit better. I like Pratt's like a tall, lanky kid, but he's held his own, and I think he's just going to keep getting better with more at-bats. I kind of like that guy. But I think they will add. I mean, well, wait, they got McCullers. They're done. They're good.
You know, I don't know. All I know is I'm drafting McCullers next year. I know he's been the worst forever, but like he's on the Brewers now, so we got to do it.
He's probably starting next week. He's gonna come away with a win next week. So here we go.
Gotta love it. Yeah, and everything I'm seeing online, it's about things I don't necessarily see happening. Like it's maybe after Joe Ryan or Kevin Gausman. Like this does not seem like the kind of move that the Brewers.
Yeah, they definitely value the young kids and, you know, the way their owner acts in terms of payroll, you know, then that's the best way for a cheap payroll too, is to keep the kids. Mm-hmm. So it feels like that's what they're going to do. Unfortunately, I'd love to see him trade for, you know, a bona fide ace, right? That'd be great. Mm-hmm. And they definitely need the comment or whoever asked the question is right about, needing another bat too. They're just short of power, and when you get into the playoffs, it becomes pretty apparent.
Yes, because the clock strikes at midnight eventually for Jake Bowers. You just hope that it's after the season.
Yeah, but you've had a good run with him, Vlad. Keep it going.
John, this has been phenomenal. It's always wonderful. I make sure to have you come on to the show every year, and you're just a phenomenal player. And I really wish you lots of luck here down the stretch and finish strong. I'm sure you will. If not with this team, maybe with one of your other teams.
That's good. Yeah, you never know. I appreciate it. Thank you. Good to be on.
Thank you. Thank you again to John Posma. And thank you all for watching, listening. Hope your post-All-Star break, rest of season goes splendidly as well. On behalf of Jason Anthony and FTN, on behalf of John Posma, I'm Vlad Settler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.